Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
And welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichten. With me today is John Krasinski of The Athletic. John, how you doing?
I'm good, Ryan. Good to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. I just wanted to have you on to kind of give a general state of the Wolves, their offseason, what basically everything that's going on, not in the immediate short term, not a whole lot going on, but certainly big things. I know we were both out at Summer League in Vegas. I guess, what are your overall impressions of the franchise? I know you love Vegas, right? That's just your favorite American city.
Can't get enough of it. Absolutely. Overall impressions, I think that they got what they wanted out of Vegas in terms of they went in with a team that had, you know, quite a few higher profile dudes on their roster. You had Dillingham and Shannon and Clark and Leonard Miller and those guys. And by and large, the team was one of the better ones out there. And those guys, there were certainly ups and downs with some of them, but I thought, you know, Shannon was all summer league team and he was dominant. Dillingham had really good moments. Clark was a little miscast in what they were asking him to do, but you can see that he's on the right path. Berenger looked really, really good. And Miller kind of a couple of games were really flashed and some other ones he didn't, but overall to go 4-1 and look like a team that had real talent in the pipeline, I think is what they really wanted to accomplish. Rob Dillingham looked good, you know, as a point guard / combo guard. Shannon looks like he's ready to take on a much bigger role with Nikhil Alexander-Walker gone. And so, and Berenger looks like a real promising prospect. So you can't really ask for a whole lot more than what they did put on display, you know, in Vegas for that, you know, 9-10 days.
Yeah. One of the biggest takeaways is they were trying to win. And really the only thing that might have stopped them from winning the whole tournament was point differential. It's kind of unfortunate that they don't, if they ended up losing a game then you go, they didn't deserve to win the tournament. But it's just they lost on point differential. If they were a bit more ruthless at the end of whatever game, they would have made it. But Shannon, obviously, I was kind of surprised they sat him out of that back-to-back, but I was just a little bit surprised. He was playing well in the West Finals, not that long ago. I'm surprised that he's out here in Summer League, but I thought kind of maybe the more interesting person was Rob. Shannon, obviously, he's going to play in the rotation. He's going to, the Nikhil minutes are going to be his, and then Rob, I think it's fair to say, will pick up some of Mike's lesser minutes, plus some other minutes here and there. But Rob's play was interesting, and it's always tough with, you can call them exhibitions, I guess, because you don't know how much they're trying. They might be saying to him, we want you to try to practice on doing this thing, and we're not really focused on the outcome of it. If it turns into a turnover, that's fine. Especially if someone was box score watching, I thought that first game where he had 7 turnovers, I was I don't think it wasn't a great good taking care of the ball game from him, but I was kind of more I don't know, watch those back. I don't think a lot of them were necessarily his fault or were certainly weren't actions that you would see in him on the big team. So I guess just general state of Rob, just because I thought, like you said, he had promising games and then less promising games, and they're going to need him to play. I think Finch kind of said 9 guys, he would be by my math, he's the ninth, and then Jalen Clark would be your 9.5 or your 10th. Where do you think the team is at with Rob? Because it does feel like a little bit like, because the front office and those people like seem to have a ton of confidence, and then at least last year Finch didn't have the same level of confidence in Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the front office and the coach staff were kind of serving two different masters last year, right? Because the front office looked at it as Rob's long-term potential is really, really good. And so they're very excited about what he can bring. And maybe there was a little bit of a hope that he would play more as a rookie. But over, you know, even that, even though he did not, it didn't really diminish their belief in him over the long term. And then for Finch, I don't necessarily think that he looks at Rob as, or he looked at Rob last year as a player that couldn't help them. It's just a player that maybe wasn't ready right now, and they needed to just win as many games as possible to compete in the Western Conference, to stay out of that play-in tournament. And so so it was the kind of a battle of the immediate need versus the long term with Rob. But going into, when you look at this whole summer and the way that it all is all shaped up, every bit of it has been a vote of confidence in Rob Dillingham, because, you know, they picked at 17 and there were two very accomplished, well thought of guards that they could have taken there. Walter Clayton Jr. from Florida, and then the Yakushonis from Illinois, both like either combo or point guardy type players that were there. And they took Berenger. Now they really love Berenger, but like, if they were really concerned about the point guard depth, they could have gone another way there for a team that is built to win right now. And so so they didn't do that. And then I think at some point, Ryan, they will add a veteran backcourt player, of Malcolm Brogdon, a campaign, somebody like that, into the mix for an insurance policy. But they have not been aggressive in trying to do something like that, which means that they are trying to make sure that there is opportunity here for Rob Dillingham to play. And what we saw in Summer League was, I think, kind of a recalibration for people, mostly for Wolves fans, about what you think that point guard position is going to look like going into the future. You know, I know a lot of people are like, hey, you know, Mike is getting older, we need another real point guard there. I don't necessarily think that's the way that the organization looks at it, because if you look around the league, the days of a game manager point guard are going away. Chris Paul's in his last year. Mike Conley is probably in his last year. Tyus Jones, it has kind of diminished in value a little bit with the way that he runs it. There just are not many point guards anymore that are just your quarterbacks of the offense. The guys that get it, I think there more and more is a belief that you're almost working with two combo guards in the backcourt a lot of the times. And both of those players have to be a threat offensively and a threat to score. And that's where Rob Dillingham fits in this point guard paradigm, is he is more of a player who is going to create for himself. He is a good passer. Like, I mean, I think he throws the lob really well. And so he brings that to the table, but he's not your traditional run the offense type of a player. And so I think that when he was given those opportunities to be a little bit more aggressive for himself is when he was at his best. The second half of Phoenix game, he was kind of playing a little more off the ball with Tristan Newton in the backcourt, sharing it. And that's just where he looks really comfortable. And I think that that's a role that he can fill, whether he's sharing the backcourt with Anthony Edwards or Dante DiVincenzo or, you know, whoever it is. That's going to be the kind of style of play that is going to bring the most out of him. And that's what I think fans have to understand. That's the kind of player that he is. And so, if he does turn the ball over a little bit here and there, that's going to happen. If he is beaten a little bit defensively here and there, that might happen. But the hope is, and I think what he did start to show in Vegas a little bit, is that he can hurt a team, a defense with his kind of dynamic shot creation, with his, you know, looking for others, with his, you know, with his shooting, which needs to be more consistent. But there's stuff there that is going to allow him to be a contributor in a different way than we've seen Mike Conley do it, and even in a different way than when Alexander Walker kind of assumed that those point guard duties. And so it's a recalibration, but I liked what I saw in general from Dillingham in Vegas.
Yeah, I think your point that, like, they probably will sign some sort of either vet minimum or, well, I think I should pull it up, but they have like $5 million under the second apron currently. You got to sign at least one someone to get to 14 roster spots. So if you're gonna leave the 15 spot open, you have that full $5 million to spend. They could go over the second apron, but they're not going to. But if you fill the 15th roster spot, you have about $3 million to spend. So it's a vet minimum. So I kind of get the sense that if the vet minimum point guard is more going to be for, like, in case of Mike emergency, like if Mike, mm-hmm. I mean, not right. even, or even not even emergency, like Mike rolls his ankle and is out 3 games or whatever, you're going to want just someone available off the bench. But I think your point that they don't necessarily view it as like a true point guard need in this. If they'll, I'm guessing they'll play lineups at Ant at point guard for a few minutes here and there. Randall can run the offense. Jake Painting tweeted out about, he has a Randall video coming up, and he tweeted out Randall's pick and roll ball handler numbers and put out a video of a Randy Rudy pick and roll that ends in a Rudy lob. Like, I think Randall can run the offense some as well. And then we saw Dante starting at point for a little bit there, and you mentioned Nikhil. So I don't think, like, they need as many quality players as they can get, obviously, and so that they'll keep looking for as the market, the bottom of the market, either kind of felt like it fell out before the offseason even started. But I, like you mentioned, they'll bring in someone, and I don't think, like, long term they view, like, they need, like you mentioned, like a setup point guard. They probably could have gone out and got Tyus Jones if they wanted him. Almost, I was still shocked that Phoenix last season got him for the minimum, and I'm not, maybe that his play last season kind of signaled that that's closer to the salary number that he's at this point in his career. I don't know. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. I think that I think part of that was role and fit, and I think Phoenix was certainly had plenty of problems. So I think he's going to be good with Orlando. But yeah, I mean, I do think the other part about it is that people have a little bit forgotten that Dante was playing point guard before he got injured, and they were playing really well. They had won 5 games in a row before he got hurt, and that seemed to be kind of falling into place. Things seem to be falling into place for him as well. And so I think that there's a real chance that he starts. And I do think that, you know, when you look at the way that the way that Shea plays with OKC, the way that Luka plays, the way, you know, there's just more and more that your alpha scorer is also your kind of lead playmaker, ball handler. And that is, you know, an area that Ant needs to continue to improve in, but I think he's going to continue to get those opportunities to play that way, which means that the importance of a true point guard is probably diminished, but they do need other ball handlers and initiators to help Ant with that and to take some of that burden off of him. And Rob is clearly going to be given that opportunity to be one of those guys.
Yeah, I would almost say, like, the biggest point guard need is for the non-Ant minutes, or maybe even the non-Ant and Julius minutes, where you don't have, I mean, there's probably not going to be many lineups without one of Ant or Julius on the court, but you're going to want someone out there. And obviously Mike is still going to play 20 or so minutes. I kind of push back against the idea that Mike is, certainly from a regular season standpoint, I think is still a high quality player. Mm-hmm. You can quibble with like a 16 game playoff player to at least from a starting perspective. But I think they still have, I certainly Mike, I don't think is ready to be done. At least not as much, not as close to it as like the general fan sentiment might think.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I can count a million different instances last year where, you know, there's plenty of discussion about, well, Mike's done, or you gotta put him out, and then, you know, he comes out and he's blocking LeBron James' shot. He's, you know, he's doing all the little things. His plus minus is plus 20 in 21 minutes. Like, those kinds of things. He's still a winning player. There's no question about it. I do think that there will be more instances next season where he's just given nights off, where he's like, okay, you know, hey, take a break here and sit this out, and hopefully they keep the gas in the tank for the playoffs, for those pressure situations, so he is fully healthy and available for those, and that will also open up more time for Rob in those situations. But yeah, I agree with you that he is still a positive player, a positive net impact player, and not to mention just everything that he means for the locker room and just how he manages and leads the team. It's just invaluable.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Yeah, and I think going into this next season, the bigger picture, kind of, like, for every team, there's kind of a regular season goal, right? Some teams, their goal is to not win basketball games. Other teams are, we are going to, our one and only goal is to win as many regular season basketball games as we can. And most teams fall somewhere in the middle where they're trying to, get their young guys to play better while also not letting the bottom fall out of their team. And I, last season, probably due to the Cat trade, the Wolves were just, we need to grab wins. And we saw that, because if they lose one more game, they're in the play-in tournament. I mean, maybe they still make the West Finals. Maybe not. Houston was probably a much harder matchup than they got with the Lakers in the first round. And they, in the play-in tournament, obviously they would have had to beat Memphis. But I think I've seen kind of people so frustrated that the Wolves played eight guys. And I was kind of like, I got it in the moment, but like, how can you not say that worked out? Yeah. And I think this upcoming season, people that had that sentiment will get more of their way. At least this is my sense, or the sense that they've kind of put out there, that they're going to play more guys, that it's that the, that them bringing back their team from last year will allow them to keep win more or the same amount of games while getting more minutes for Rob, for Clark, for Shannon, or just for different creative lineups or what have you, sitting Mike more often to help him out. Is my sense there correct that that's going to be more their priority?
I mean, I think so. You know, of course, last year would have been great if Shannon and Dillingham got more significant minutes during the season and got to ramp up a little bit. But they were in such a dogfight for positioning. And Chris Finch was validated with that approach, because he did get them to out of the play-in. He did get them to the Western Conference Finals for the second straight year. And so, you know, I'm always just kind of tickled by the criticism that he gets. Now, I think there's plenty of room for critiquing, and it shouldn't be a blind faith, but it also should be a recognition that, hey, he knows what he's doing. He's done something that no one else has done in this organization, and he's clearly molded the team to a point where they felt confident enough going into those playoff series to get to win two rounds, and that's not a small thing. And so, but he also has now recognized that the depth that Oklahoma City showed, the depth that Indiana showed, like some of those, like an advantage that can be for a team. And so I think that there is going to be a priority going into next season to utilize the depth a little bit more. Now, we'll see what happens if they are struggling, and if they can't, you know, kind of, if that depth is not contributing to them being in the top six, because I don't think in the West, I don't think the goal even needs to be top four. I mean, it should, that would be nice to have home court advantage, but I don't think it's a necessity. I just think the parity is such that if you're in the top six, you have a chance to win multiple rounds, as the Wolves showed. And so, so I think the priority should still be being out of the play-in in that top six. But if there is a little bit of a way to understand that you are, you may give up a game or two here or there, especially early while Dillingham is finding his way, while Shannon is settling into a role, this and that, but that you can kind of win the war by losing the battle early, I think there's going to be a little bit more recognition of that. But the we won't really know until the test comes, until they've lost three in a row. And does Finch stay with it? Does he keep giving these young guys rope and learn and room to grow? Or does he really kind of shorten the rotation, tighten things up, and kind of go revert back to that style and that approach? We just won't know until that part of it is tested.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent they don't know until it's tested. I think it's fair to maybe not assume is the wrong word, but it's fair to think that that their second half of the play is more representative of who they are. And I'm always kind of like, this is my kind of general thought, or maybe the general thought of statistics in general. It's always dangerous to take a recent sample over a bigger sample, and so in general, it's probably more likely that their whole regular season record is more representative of who at least last year's teams were than if you extrapolate their record from March on, and extrapolate that. So it's I wouldn't say, oh, they're a 60-win team because they won at a 60-win pace for 2 months. But I do think that cohesion was such a big deal early on in the season, and they clearly didn't have it. Go ask the guys in Toronto if they were gelling correctly after Randall froze out Rudy in the paint. And so I do think that they'll just win games more naturally and be able to play some more guys. But I wanted to talk to you about just what was your feeling about the offseason overall. I know you've kind of had some pushback about the KD stuff, that there wasn't the rumor out there that they were looking to trade Phoenix. I think it's more accurate, as you put out, that Phoenix wanted what was it, Rudy, Dante, Shannon, and a pick, or Rob and a pick, and that was more closely what Phoenix wanted. And while the vague Wolves trade would have been something like that, that it wasn't necessarily all of that from the Wolves' end. But what was your thought about them kind of backing away from the KD trade seemingly fairly early in the process?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, they were definitely in it. They definitely wanted KD, just as they did in February. And they had substantive conversations with Phoenix about trying to get something done. And I do believe, like you said, that Phoenix wanted to send him to Minnesota versus Houston in terms of what they thought they could get back. What I can tell you definitively is that it was not going to be Rudy, Dante, Shannon, and the 17th pick, or Rob and the 17th pick. That's just was never going to be the ultimate price that the Wolves paid. It was going to be less than that. How far were they willing to go? I'm not exactly sure, but they weren't going to throw all of that into it. But I understand. I mean, that all fits with the Tim Connelly ethos so far with the Timberwolves, is that he's going to take big swings. He's going to go after big names when they become available. He had discussions with Damian Lillard. They checked in on Bradley Beal. They've done a million, Rudy, all these other things. They make big deals under Tim Connelly. And so they were very much in on trying to get a deal done for Durant, and I would have loved it. I think it would have been really interesting and really fun to see how that all came together. But I think they made the absolute right decision that once KD told them that, nope, I don't want to be in Minnesota, I'm going to, I want to be elsewhere, that they got out of it. And I think that there was some confusion on their part, because they had received indications in February that KD was good with coming to Minnesota. So something changed, and who knows exactly what that was. But it's the right approach and the right thing to not get into the KD business when he doesn't want to be in business with you, because we have shown over the last few stops that when he is not all the way in, it can really be a difficult thing for the organization to work with. And so I think that they were smart to go after KD, because I think it would have been a good match. And then they were also smart to say, nope, this isn't for us now. If you're not, if you don't want to be here, we're not going to force you to be here. And so pulling out was the right approach as well. And now they go forward, and now they do have more just continuity going into next season. And the last time they had continuity from one season to the next, it worked out pretty well when they, you know, went to the Western Conference Finals the first time and won 56 games and had everyone together. So, you know, there is room, I think, for this team to still grow, even with the top seven guys still being in place and just a lot of the same minutes being doled out.
Yeah, I was kind of confused almost on their behalf for the KD stuff, because I know we were, all of us on Media Row were talking about pretty much all season, or at least once it became clear Phoenix was, their season was not going well. It was like, oh, KD's going to want to come here. Chris is writing this book about a whole chapter about KD and Ant, right? Like, and it was just kind of like surprising that like he just had basically no interest in coming here. And Phoenix is going to be really good, and he's kind of has more experience playing in Texas than he does in the Midwest. But I just was a little bit surprised that like playing with Ant, chasing a title on it. This is maybe I'll let my fan kind of side leak out here, but like, I think if KD's on the Wolves, they have better championship odds this for KD's next 1, 2, 3 years than Houston will. Maybe my fan glasses, maybe I'm latching onto this idea too much, but like, you need to win a title, you need like one of the 50 greatest players in their prime on your team. And Houston doesn't have that. And it's like the hardest thing to get. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's dumb, because if you have Kevin Durant and one of the best defenses in the league, that's enough to win the title. But like, I was just a little bit surprised at that. But maybe, again, that's me. That's my rose-colored Wolves glasses on for that.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll start by saying, like, I do think that Houston's going to be really, really good. I like KD's fit there. I think, and I don't know what was the impetus for KD saying, this is what I want. I don't know if it was taxes. I don't know if it was team. I don't know if it was coaching. I don't know. I'm not sure. We just haven't heard him kind of lay everything out from his perspective. But one thing I do know is that he is a player that changes his mind, that kind of evolves, you know, kind of as things go along. And so maybe something happened to make him decide elsewhere. But yes, I mean, in terms of like his fit here with Anthony Edwards, I think like, at this stage of KD's career, I think it's a better situation, because I think he could have come here and really just do what he wants to do and just play basketball and not be bothered. Now, certainly he would get a lot of attention. He's Kevin Durant, but Ant would soak up a lot of the spotlight for him and would, I think, do a really, really good job of deflecting things away from him when KD needed it, and then giving KD the flowers when he needed it as well. And so now he goes to Houston, and it's a younger team in general. He's got Van Vliet and he's got a few other vets there, but like he's kind of the alpha dog now on this Rockets team at this age. I just wonder if that's the best thing. I do, like I said, I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to be a contender for sure. But I do like KD's fit better on Minnesota than I do on Houston, even though I do really like it on Houston.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Yeah. And so once KD isn't available or isn't reasonably available for the Wolves, they pivot to re-signing their guys other than Nikhil. We saw Nikhil at, I think this is the game you had left by them, but Nikhil, I'm sure you saw, sat down next to him, and he's showing Ant his new house in Atlanta, and it's a house you'd imagine for, go look up a salary number, beautiful, beautiful home. But they re-signed their highest salary guys in Randall and Nas. What do you think about, I think there's been also some like frustration that they just ran it back from a team that kind of both Western Conference Finals years have shown it's not quite good enough to win the title. And my view on it has been, yeah, this exact version of the roster isn't necessarily good enough to win a title or doesn't have the percentage chance that you'd theoretically like. But I just kind of been like, what was the move that you wanted them to do? Because you, same group of people was already kind of poo-pooing the KD trade idea. And so my kind of view on it has been, they're still going to be damn good. Are they still a good step behind Oklahoma City and maybe even Denver or Houston? Maybe. Houston or OKC for sure. Denver, Houston, maybe. But they retain their guys and they have the flexibility, both salary-wise, both apron-wise, to make whatever, I don't even know what it would be, whatever big move that in my head puts them, rockets them up into that class. And so in the meantime, I thought they did what they needed to do to continue putting a team that could very easily make the West Finals again, could, if you get a lucky break or something, you're in the top spot or whatever. But what do you think about the quote-unquote running it back idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you hit it in terms of, like, I understand fans who look at the way that it went in the Western Conference Finals, and maybe they look at the Steph injury or whatever and just like, hey, is this team really, you know, really good enough to kind of continue to dub itself a contender? And shouldn't they go and do something more? And I would, yeah, I just think that it's one thing to say that that should happen, but it's another thing to actually have a realistic option for them to go pursue. They went and pursued KD. It didn't work out. Giannis isn't available right now. And even if he was, there'd be a million teams that probably outbid the Wolves. You know, like who, what is the magic bullet? You know, De'Aaron Fox is not available. You know, there's all sorts of like possibilities out there, but there's nothing that they really had available to them to make a big splashy change. And so then in the absence of that, they pivoted and went to continuity. And I still do think that it is very conceivable that Anthony Edwards takes another step forward as an all-around player, that I think Jaden McDaniels is going to continue to ascend. What we saw from him offensively in the playoffs is really promising. And I think that he can continue to take big leaps forward. Whatever you get with Rob Dillingham and Terrence Shannon is going to be different from Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And I think Dante DiVincenzo is going to be much better in his second year with the Timberwolves than he was in his first. So I don't think it is Kool-Aid drinking to believe that there is an avenue where this team is improved from last season. Now, yeah, are they good enough to win a championship? That I don't know. And that I would say that people are right to say that OKC should be favored before them, that maybe even that Houston and Denver should be favored before them. I don't think, you know, I don't get the Clippers hype. I don't think that that's, you know, I'm not sold on that part of it, but certainly Denver, Oklahoma City, and Houston are all like all made significant moves and look poised to be really, really good. And so there's going to be certainly competition, but I think that there's a difference between what the Timberwolves did and kind of holding pat and then being stagnant. They're going to have a different look with some of the young guys that are going to get more time. And I just think that, you know, yeah, Naz Reid will be better next year. He's better every single year he comes back. So So there's the internal improvement is such that players are still young enough in their young core that that I just think that there's a possibility that this team comes back more familiar with one another, gets improvement from those young guys, and plays better and is better than next than they were last season. So I don't necessarily look at it as, well, they didn't make a big move, and so they're either going to be where they are or they're going to take a step back. I don't think that's the case for this team, for the way that this group is made up.
Yeah, and they're good, like, big picture, they're just, the Ant needs to be almost a year in, year out, first team All-NBA caliber player. And I thought he was that for the last couple months of the season, and I thought he was almost, like, far from that. I thought he played particularly poorly, and it wasn't all on him. They were triple teaming him and whatever, but I thought he was playing so much better by the end of the season than he was in December, and I thought by the Oklahoma City series he had kind of reverted back to kind of that December play, and obviously OKC had most or all of to do with that. Their defense was about, like, we thought last year's Wolves defense was the best of the past 10 years in the NBA, and this last OKC defense kind of blew that out of the water. They were incredible that way, but I wanted to talk about in Vegas, we the new ownership situation had, they kind of had their official press conference to cement them as the ownerships, and we kind of, you and I and select Minnesota media, had like a smaller group discussion with them. But I think just hearing what people have felt about it is like, they're saying all the right things. I thought, like, if you take what they say at face value, it was amazing. But there's rightful skepticism with, maybe not rightful for them, but just any new people that come in. I mean, it's Alex Rodriguez. I think if it was any, if he changed his name, like, it's just like Yankee Star buys the Wolves, is like, people are skeptical of that. But what is your own overall feeling? Are they going to live up to what they say about spending the proper amount, about not moving the team, about rebrand, all that stuff? What are you kind of talking with them throughout the years, last week in Vegas? What is your kind of overall impression about these new guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think so far, the way that I've kind of approached it is I listen to what they have to say and then I see if they follow up on it. And to this point, everything that they have said they were going to do, they've done. You know, when they first joined, they said they wanted to make sure they hired the best and brightest people, and then they hired Tim Connelly. They extended Chris Finch. You know, Glenn Taylor had certainly a lot to do with that, but Alex Rodriguez and Mark Laurie were heavily involved with it. They brought in Michael Grady. Like, they've done things like that that have given them a little bit of a track record. They have said that they're going to spend money, and then, you know, they paid $90 million luxury tax last year, and it was on them by the end of it. The deal closed in time that Glenn did not have to cut that check, and Alex and Mark did have to cut that check. And so so they paid that. And then, oh, by the way, they signed Naz Reid and Julius Randle to major, major deals that are like $225 or $250 million in free agency. And so they're spending money that way. They said privately and publicly, through the ownership struggle, through the battle for control, that they were in the right and that they were going to win this, and that this was, that they were in the right position, and then they won it. And so so they have done the things that they said they were going to do now, but now this does, the parameters change now, because now they are not just part of a committee that is making the decisions. Now they are making all of the decisions. And so they are going to be evaluated going forward on what happens with the team, with the arena, with the rebrand, with all of it. It's all on them now. There is, and so, you know, it's kind of like they were the dog chasing the ambulance. Now they caught it. Now what happens? What do you do with it? And so, so they're going to have to put a lot of their plans into place and then own their decisions, both good and bad. But I think the early signs have been positive on how they're going about it and what they're doing and how closely they're listening to people who have been here and who are in positions of influence. And so, we will see is the whole thing. We can't guarantee anything. And every new owner makes big mistakes. We just see it time and time again, but it's like, how do you learn from those and how do you recover and how do you pivot away from them? But so far, those guys are, you're right, they're saying the right things, but they've done a lot of the right things as well. And they'll just have to continue to do that. And if they make big mistakes, we'll rake them over the coals for that and then see what happens. But on that final point about moving, like, I don't think they're moving. I think that's genuine. I think everything about them has been, we're not moving. I think the league does not want the team to move out of Minneapolis and out of the Twin Cities. And so there's not one bit of me that is concerned that the Timberwolves are going to move now that this ownership thing has transferred to Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez. I think they're here for the long haul.
Yeah, that was certainly the worry when maybe Yankee star, Seattle baseball star.
Yeah, rightfully star. So. I understood right away the initial fan reaction of like, oh my gosh, this is an outsider. You know, they're definitely going to move the team and all of this stuff. Like, that's perfectly understandable. But everything that they have done since they came on board has been to calm that down. But beyond it, the reporting that I've done and others have done about what the league views as this market and the expansion that is probably going to be happening and all of these other factors really does kind of take away a lot of the angst, I think, that that surrounds that kind of a concern.
Yeah, I think it's fair to be both cautiously optimistic and cautiously skeptical about kind of everything. And I think they've said basically, obviously, there's always a bottom business line that like they got to be paying attention for their own sake. But like they have put out there in their actions to this point have shown like winning is more important than making an extra X million dollars. I mean, I wrote a piece about the WNBA CBA stuff. They didn't get the links for free, but it wasn't the biggest part of it. Every NW franchise and the links included have tripled in value in the last year, not to mention from when they've started this process. That's just the links. They got the Wolves at a discount. So I do like they have extra, they've already made a bunch of money on this. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say they won't try to make more money. They're obviously going to, they talked a lot about like they have this new ticketing platform. The whole fan experience point is going to change. So they're going to try to make more money that way. Good for them. But I do think we can be, and especially for the Lynx, this is a good point that they are not going to be meddling in the basketball part of it as much. They're going to let, I know Lynx fans, I get, are especially skeptical of anyone else, but like they're going to let the basketball people do their thing. Maybe they'll do business stuff that you won't like. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. I would kind of argue that the business stuff that's gone on in the past X number of years hasn't been ideal either, but they're going to leave the basketball stuff largely alone, or at least support where they can or need to, and kind of leave it alone when it's best.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was one of the most definitive things that they said, you know, in our sit down with them, was that especially with the Lynx, with Cheryl, they're proven. They've won championships. They've been to the finals. They were just in the finals last year. And literally, like Alex said, we're going to let Cheryl cook and just we're staying out of her way and we'll be here to support. But that they view the Lynx as sort of a self-sustaining enterprise right now. And I think it's similar with the Wolves basketball. I mean, they were integral in hiring Connolly. They were integral in making the decision to extend Chris Finch. They have Ant. They have, you know, all the pieces fairly much in place from the basketball side of things. And so I don't expect big changes on that side either for the Wolves. But the big changes that fans will notice are on the business side. They'll hire a new CEO. They have brought in the ticketing platform. They're going to do a lot of different things to try and create more revenue out of Target Center until they can get to a point where they're building a new arena and printing money out of that thing. But that's the biggest difference or change that fans will notice is on the business side. The basketball side of both franchises should remain largely untouched right now.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Awesome. Yeah. And before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about your career covering the team and just your history. I know you love talking about yourself. That is your
that's John Krasinski's favorite thing.
Yep. One self-indulgent question. So game seven, Denver, last year, they win. I think we both agree at the time it was the greatest win in franchise history, neck and neck with 04, obviously. I remember, so did media in the locker room with select players, and then Ant and Kat were out in the press conference room, and that was when Kat had the "how much you want us to lose" quote, which is my favorite. But I'm prepared for this to not have a good answer, but I remember you and Kat walking side by side for a good portion of that walk down there, and I thought I saw you guys talking. Do you remember what you said to Kat on that walk down there? And I'm prepared for it to be just, I do not, or it was good job.
No, it was like, that was a moment where we were walking, because he and I had been through his whole career together. I was there, you know, right when he arrived. And, you know, when he was first introduced here, and when he went through all of the losing early in the career, and then, you know, his mom and, you know, Jimmy Butler stuff and all of it. And so that was kind of a fun sort of special thing to just like walk with him and just talk about, man, you really did this. Like, you look at how far you've come. And like, I've done that with a couple of players over the years. I even did it with Ant kind of recently. And I always try to sort of like have a big picture conversation, or just like a mention. It wasn't like we weren't talking for 20 minutes, but it was like, hey, like, appreciate this, like, understand everything you've went through to get to this point and how big of a role that you played in making game seven happen. He was terrific in that game, came up with some huge, huge plays, and everything that just like you've endured. Like, I think that I was happy for him in that moment, because he has been so kind of scrutinized and criticized, and some of it's been valid and a lot of it hasn't been. But yeah, we took that moment or that walk, and it just like, hey, like, you did it. Can you think about what you went through to get to this point? And it, you know, in the hubbub and the chaos of everything that was happening that night, I thought it was important just to like, hey, catch your breath, just take a minute and think about what you just did. And you know, he was very receptive to it, and he was very, you know, happy about it. And it was kind of like, you know, we've walked this path together a little bit. And so to be in it with him was really fun. And then to share that moment with him was like, it was a special thing. So it was a really, really cool thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it stinks that the Dallas series didn't work out, and especially he didn't shoot well or play well necessarily in that series. Although the one game they did win, he had the dagger at the end there, but it really, that ends up being his last big moment, a really like positive moment with the Wolves. And they let him go that next offseason. But last question I'll ask you for is, you covered the team a long time during the down years. The original idea of this podcast was to talk about those down years. And we pivoted to what it became now. But what has it been like transitioning from that, where you just like, I mean, how many years, even like to have the one Jimmy playoff year, but as recently as, I mean, the pandemic, or the first season coming out of the pandemic, like, I don't know where this, I mean, especially when the world went into the pandemic, if you, obviously the Wolves were far from our minds at that point, but like, they just had nothing really. I mean, the draft lottery was coming up, but it was like, the Wolves had the second best odds. This is not a good draft. Obviously, like, Ant and LaMelo and Tyrese have been as good as any draft class you'd want, but what has it been like going from that one playoff series in like 20 years, right? To now, I would argue, as good of, other than Oklahoma City, I would stack up their future 5 to 10 years next to anyone. Mm-hmm. What has it been like? You're not necessarily a fan anymore, mm-hmm. but certainly you're invested is the wrong word. You are. It's better for you if they win, obviously.
For sure.
What has it been like going from just maybe the worst franchise in all of professional sports to, at the very least, making the playoffs and winning some games?
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. You know, like the first 14 years I was on the beat, I never covered a playoff game and slept in my own bed. I would travel with the AP a little bit to some other finals and things like that every once in a while. But, and you know, I knew every year that the season was ending, April 14th or 13th, and then that was it. And then we were going. And I think that, you know, during those times, you know, with all of the work that I was putting into it and trying to tell good stories and all of these things, you got the cracks from people like, why are you spending your time? Why are you wasting your time with this? No one cares about the Wolves. No one cares about the NBA. And I just knew that to be false. Like, I just knew that all, you know, all the fans needed in this market was a reason to show up, and then they would. And so really, like, what I'm most appreciative of and most happy for of this kind of renaissance of the roster of the franchise is that the fans are being rewarded for just years and years and years of getting kicked in the teeth and having to deal with all of the drama. And even when they were bad, it wasn't just, they weren't playing bad. They were like dysfunctional bad and just embarrassingly bad. And so to see them rewarded and to see, you know, there were several times, Ryan, like, even in this last playoff run where, you know, I would settle into my seat before the game one, you know, against the Warriors and in the second round, and the place is full and everything, you know, it's on fire. Everything is going crazy. And you think like, wow, like, look at how far this has come. And that's just really, really cool to see so many fans so happy about it. And then, you know, from a personal standpoint, more people read you when, you know, when you're winning. And like, you know, I always put all my heart and soul into telling great stories about bad teams. And you know, maybe not as many people are paying attention. And so now that you have Ant, and now that you have a team that's winning, and you know, I don't think my work product is any higher quality, but certainly it has a bigger audience. And so to be able to get it in front of more eyeballs and have people enjoy it and see it and consume it, that's been really rewarding as well. And now, you know, now to see, I don't hear as much anymore of, why are you wasting your time with them? Like, what, you know, nobody cares about that. No, that's like, they're probably the second most popular franchise in the market right now. And that's just been really, really cool to see like the whole state come alive. It is a basketball state, and now we get to really see it, kind of what that looks like, you know, now that they have a reason to come out and cheer and come out and watch podcasts and watch live shows and read stories and all that stuff. So I'm glad that I stuck with it. And now that I have, now I feel like now I get to reap the rewards of it a little bit, you know, being the old guy, and you know, I have a little bit of perspective and things that I can lean on to tell deeper, more meaningful stuff. And that's been just been really, really fun.
Andy Dufresne, right?
Andy Dufresne. Climbing
through miles of crap to come out clean on the other side, right?
That's right. That's me. Yeah. And it was smelly there for a while, Ryan. Like there, we were in there. I was wondering if I was going to make it through that tunnel. So what we did.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'll just thank you personally. You've been a really good mentor for me, from knowing you for a while, just when I used to do stat stuff a long time ago. But yeah, I appreciate you coming on doing this, and hopefully we all can get a title to share. Well, two of them. We'll get a Lynx title and then a Wolves title back to back. We'll do it.
There we go.
The combo play.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Appreciate it. Happy for the success and the hard work that you're putting into this, that it's starting to bear some fruit. So keep it up, and yeah, we'll see you down the road, man.
Yep. Appreciate you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Go Wolves.
Ayoo!
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.